Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we help enlighten the world around us and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone. And now your host, internationally renowned spiritual intuit, medium, channel, author, artist, lecturer, and ordained minister, Ms. Barbara DeLong.
Thank you so much, and welcome everyone. That was the magical voice of Ken Quiet Hawk, inviting you to come in out of the mainstream and join with us for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change, what we call creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and wisdom. These are times of change, times that call to the light workers. And you answer that call from all walks of life and from countless aspects of spiritual realms. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading your wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. I'm losing my place here. We all come from different backgrounds and modalities, from all walks of life, and yet there is a synchronicity, a commonality that draws and blends us together, weaving us once more into a collective purpose, a common direction, and a united family once again. We go by different titles: watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, querents, journeyers and journeymen, seekers, star children, philosophers, light workers, light bearers, and, well, the list goes on and on and on. It is as unique and eclectic as are we. Yet we all have the same spiritual calling. We all have, in our own very individual ways, we all have our own very individual ways to bring light into this reality, to facilitate the awakening and shifting of the consciousness of all of mankind. This is my own very private oasis in the turmoil we call evolution. So sit back, take a break, share your lights with us, and join in the love, the light, and the laughter that spiritual energy always generates when lights are blended and spirits lifted. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Jeannie, we welcome you in and hope you'll add your lights to ours to increase the energy and brighten all of our personal lights. Jeannie's in the chat room and can answer any questions you may have. I don't multitask well, so she's the one you should. I am. Ken Quiet Hawk can be found at nativestorytellers.com if you want to experience more of that amazing voice. I'm still trying to find out a way if we can bottle that. I'm at barbaradelong.com, and our special guest tonight, Douglas DeLong, can be reached at douglasdelong.com. He and his wife, Carol, have founded the DeLong Ancient Mystery School that's located in Saskatchewan, Canada. The mission of their school is to pass on the ancient teachings for spiritual and psychic development to children and adults, to support and encourage the development of each one's sense of spiritual, emotional, and physical well-being, helping them to find and feel their connection to the Creator, their life purpose, and to feel personally empowered and fulfilled. Douglas DeLong is a past life therapist, chakra master, medical intuitive counselor, and spiritual teacher. He is the author of Ancient Teachings for Beginners, Ancient Healing Techniques, and Past Lives for Beginners, all published by Llewellyn. And he isn't here yet. So I guess that I'm going to speak for him. I'm going to tell you how I came to be connected to him. somebody from the chat room IM'd me during one of my shows and said she had heard a show that interviewed a man called Douglas DeLong, and she said, are you related to him? And you know, I wrote back and said, I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Found his site, his school, the ancient teachings. Wait a minute. His school is the DeLong School for Ancient Mysteries, I think. Oh, I have to check that. Isn't it terrible when you get something in your head? Is this the DeLong Ancient Mystery School? And so they founded this school, and it is profoundly wonderful. It is just for spiritual development, empowerment, and all of that kind of good stuff. And I am, you know, going to be fascinated to talk to him. I think he's on the line now. Hi, Douglas.
No,
is that you?
No, it's Deanna. How are you?
Hi.
Okay, I'm going to be listening.
Well, I'm glad you're going to be listening. I have to get off and get back to work here. We're waiting for him to call in, and he hasn't quite made it yet. I'm glad you're here, though, Deanna.
Thank you.
Okay. Thought we had him for a minute. Anyhow, so I called him and I spoke with him. And it turns out that actually we are very, very distantly related. We're cousins of some sort. And it is kind of exciting to actually meet somebody else who has the same last name as you do. DeLong is not a common name, and apparently the DeLong family was more prolific than I thought. he has an amazing background, and he started at an early age. He's been in the field for over 25 years, and it's really kind of neat. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what he says about himself, because it's very interesting. It says, Douglas DeLong is a spiritual personal counselor, past life therapist, and chakra master. He studied and developed his own psychic abilities and spiritual growth for over 25 years. He was born with the ability to see human auras, chakras, spirits, guides, and angels. Douglas was always reading books about psychic and metaphysical subjects, but due to the nature of his stepfather's profession, he and his family traveled for many years, and his psychic ability started to close up from lack of use. It wasn't until after his near-death experience at the age of 19 that he reawakened his childhood gifts. Through numerous life lessons and years of metaphysical studies, Douglas was able to enhance his abilities and create a unique course that he has been teaching for more than 15 years. In the past quarter century, he has regressed close to 1,500 individuals and students. He has been guided to put his knowledge and channel teachings into book form in order to help people open up and develop their innate abilities. He and his wife, Carol, reside in Saskatchewan, where they own and operate the DeLong Ancient Mystery School. And it is an amazing school. They offer an amazing variety of information and an amazing eclectic approach to things. I'm looking forward to talking to him, especially about chakras, because chakras are something that I am very involved with and have used in almost everything that I have done. And it's kind of a very exciting thing to find another person, you know, probably hundreds of miles away. And actually, it was very interesting because after I discovered Douglas, or he discovered me, I'm not sure which, we discovered that there is also a George DeLong out on the West Coast. And he is also involved in astrology and metaphysical stuff as well. So we are looking forward to sort of combining all our modalities and seeing just what the DeLong family clan can pull together. I know that he said that in his write-up, he said that he had a near-death experience at age 19, and I'm really, you know, really fascinated with that, because though I haven't had a near-death experience, I have had the experience of talking to many people who have, and it is a remarkable experience. Patrick and I did many shows on the near-death experience, and we were fascinated always with the fact that it's really quite apparent that there's a great similarity between everyone's experiences. There are so many similarities that it just can't be imagination. There has to be something to it. And, of course, none of us will know until, of course, we've crossed over just exactly how accurate the similarity is. I kept hoping that perhaps Patrick would come back and talk to me about it, but he hasn't quite arrived yet, but I do believe Douglas has. Let me see. Hi, Douglas, are you there?
Yes, finally.
Did you hit a lot of traffic?
Here.
Did you hit a lot of...
Sort of. I've got through all your showing me how to do things. I finally got through. I can hear your voice. Everything's great. So I'm calming down now.
Oh, don't panic. When I was talking to Jeannie just before the show started, we were talking, in the green room. That's what Bear calls it. And I said, oh, look, it's only 40 seconds till show. I'll talk to you later. And she said, okay, goodbye. And I said goodbye, and I hung up the phone. So, So don't worry. Everybody has those hitches. I've been telling everybody about you and about the school and about you and Carol putting together a school. I know that lots of people who are called to the spiritual/metaphysical realms have lots of experiences. Not everyone starts school, and I'm just fascinated with, I know you've had 25 years of experiences, you've certainly read a plethora of material, and you've written three books yourself. What was it that called you, compelled you to start a school?
Well, there were several things. I was guided from above. As a child, I used to see guides and angels and beings in the middle of the night. I'd wake up in 3 or 4 in the morning, and there'd be a beautiful woman looking down, trying to touch my head, or I'd see angels, and it was really strange. So that's when it started. And then when I got older, I read everything I could on anything that was metaphysical. And, of course, you mentioned I had a near-death experience at 19 that helped open up doors for me. And I just did a lot of studies, a lot of research. I went through the Rosicrucians in California. Of course, once a Rosicrucian, always a Rosicrucian. I learned a great deal through them. Yeah, and it was just incredible, all the information and knowledge. I couldn't not absorb enough. Back then, you could just barely get a lot of enough stuff on ghosts and UFOs, but now there's just an incredible explosion of knowledge and wisdom out there. And about 20 years ago, Carol and I had been doing a lot of her work, teaching classes, doing sessions, and I got told, well, hey, you need to start a class or a school. And we started the school here in Saskatchewan, Canada, the Long Ancient Mystery School. And it kind of raised a few eyebrows, but we got everything going. And we've been probably not quite 20 years, about 18 years we've had the school. And I've been working as a past life therapist for well over 20. And Carol and I teach classes. We do psychic development classes, healing, distance healing, chakra work. I do spiritual counseling, past life therapy work. Sometimes right when someone's with me here or right long distance, someone can phone me. I can oftentimes guide them. And we do many, many things. Carol's a Reiki master, much like yourself, and I think she has a similar philosophy to you. So I was guided. I just know sometimes. You know how you just know you have to do something?
Yeah, I do. And I know if you don't do it, the universe makes sure that you do it.
Yeah, they kick you in the butt and get you back on your path, and that's what's happened.
So I call those my 2x4 moments.
Yeah, that works for me. That's pretty good. Yeah. But I think we both find when you follow your path, when you finally listen to your guidance, things flow easily and comes together. There's that synchronicity with everything. So it's really wonderful. And you and I have been talking to each other back and forth for a little while and getting to know one another, and it's really cool. A lot of your philosophies are very, very similar to mine, and it's really great to see someone like that. And I guess hope I answered the question.
Yes, you did. I just, your latest book is Past Lives for Beginners, which I think is incredible because, of course, none of us are beginners at being, you know, reincarnated, but recognizing that we have past lives and that we can use those experiences to better enhance this lifetime is something that a lot of people don't understand. I know people have in the past played with, oh, I was a scullery maid and I was Cleopatra, and they laugh about it and they kind of go on. And lately I have spent more time, especially with Mary Peeler and James, both of whom are mediums, giving people their past lives and showing how those past life experiences impact this life, and sometimes explain things and sometimes make things easier, and sometimes, you know, the light bulb goes on and that's where that talent came from. I'm going to use it. So it is an amazing thing, and of course we've had so many past lives to have knowledge of all of them would probably drive us slightly insane. Though I think I'd like to try. But past lives are really meant to be a teaching tool for us if we take the time to go back and learn of them and sort of embrace the wisdom that each past life has brought us, because past lives are not just things to be ignored, and they are, you know, it isn't, you know, I had that past life, that's over and done, now I get on to another one. It's a constant gathering of information and wisdom and insight, and it brought you to this point in time. So how do you do the past life regression? Do you do it with hypnotherapy? How do you actually go and get a person's past life or a past life for them?
Okay, well, I don't really use hypnotherapy. I guess supposedly one out of every three people can be hypnotized. What I do is partly a form of guided meditation, but I also do a chakra flow meditation, which is used as an induction method to get someone to the right altered state. I find by doing that, when the person relaxes, I can see their aura, the energy around them, and then I watch this beautiful light starting to flow through their bodies, going up and down, and I guide the energy through their chakras. And as a person opens up, as the energy flows through, particularly through the crown and the heart chakras, they start to relax. There's a beautiful smile on their faces. And then the energy, I see it flowing up and down. And as that happens, probably about 80% of the people I work with are successful in getting to where they need to go. Now, a couple of strange things will happen. 30 years ago, I was working with some of my clients to be relaxed in the chair. And as they got into that altered state, the light alpha state, and then slowly into the deeper levels, not only would I see this beautiful light starting to shine around them and above their head, and then all of a sudden I would see an angelic face looking back at me. Sometimes a client could be, say, a woman with dark hair and dark eyes. She'd have her eyes shut, and I knew she was under. And then there was suddenly an image over top of this woman. It would be a beautiful blonde-haired lady with blue eyes just staring back at me, watching me, seeing what I was doing. So the first time it happened to me, I went, oh. Then I realized that was one of her angels around her and protecting her. And I've been seeing that for many, many years. It's just a wonderful blessing. And that's when I know, when I see that, and I start to see a shimmering of light floating above the person, and their soul starts to slip up and out. I know that they're ready. They'll get the past life information. They'll go astral or soul travel, going up into the Akashic Records or the Universal Library. And when that's happening, it's an amazing thing. They're not just getting a past life regression, Barb. They're actually having energy work being done on them. Sometimes there's some healing that needs to be done, and they may go up to a place and see an angel or guide or a loved one that's passed over, or these high beings of light will take them in the beautiful gardens or into the Akashic Records, the Universal Library, where everything's stored. And it's just amazing. So I never know what's going to happen to someone. And it's just wonderful. Okay.
I do it differently, and you know, if I'm working with a person, I take them into a relaxation as well. And if once they're relaxed, I will ask them to identify places on their body that feel strange or tingle. Usually we identify probably three or four different places. And once we've identified them, I take them into each of those places where there is a past life that has something to do with this life. And I let them describe it to me, but as they're describing it, I'm seeing it as well. And so, you know, what we do is we retrieve four or five, depending on what it is, past lives. And then after that, we talk about and weave them together and figure out how they do apply to this lifetime and whatever issue they're working on at this particular point in time. And I was regressing a young lady that is like a surrogate daughter to me, and she had identified, I think, five places, and we went through them and we went into one of them, and you know, we went down to the look at your feet, tell me what your feet look like,
okay,
what does these, you know, that type of, so what does the surrounding look like, what's going on. And she was telling me, and I, you know, finally I said, Angela? She said, yes. I said, what does this have to do with the issue we're working on? She said, nothing. It's just such a pretty lifetime. I said, well, take a deep breath, enjoy it, and come on back. We have work to do. But when we're on the show and we do past lives, it's more or less, I'm not sure what I would call it, because I tune to a person's energy and I sort of go down a tunnel and I suddenly see a picture of what that past life is, and I can explain it and I can explain why it's there and how it relates to this lifetime. And I know Mary Peeler usually goes for a commonsensical one that is very, very logical, and I go for as strange as I can get, because I think those are the lifetimes that will be the most impressive for the person to hear this lifetime, and the weirder the better, because there's a message there, and they always laugh and they always think it's wonderful and they always embrace it and they always take something away from it. I mean, clearly yours is a much more in-depth process. What I do on the show is not in depth.
Okay.
But
I still think you do a great job from what I've been hearing and listening to.
It's so much fun. I love past lives. I can't tell you. I get such a warm feeling when somebody asks for a past life, because it says, you know, I get to go traveling through time, which is a phenomenal thing to do.
Oh yeah, exactly.
When you started to do all of this, I know you were very, very young, and then, of course, you said you closed down because of travel, and then at 19 you had a near-death experience. What happened to you at 19?
Okay. At 19, I ended up having all this surgery. They thought first it was appendix, and then they thought I had Crohn's disease, which affects the bowels, and I had I don't know how many surgeries, and at one point they had actually I guess it blew open where they'd had this surgery working on it, the old-fashioned type of looked like hair curlers they used to use with the really old-fashioned. So they had me done up from my sternum right down to my groin area. They had sliced me open there, and it blew open. And so I was lying there with this open area and incredible pain. It was just unbelievable. I kept going in and out of my body, not remembering everything. And my heartbeat was too slow. And I kept begging for something for pain, but they wouldn't give me anything. And then that night, as I'm lying there across, I could see the male nurse. And all of a sudden, I had this strange, strange feeling. My consciousness went from the top of my head, and I could literally feel something moving down towards my stomach, towards my solar plexus, and all of a sudden I came out of my physical form, and I was floating above, looking down at this sick, pasty-faced 19-year-old, skinny, with tubes up the nose and every place else, and I'm watching, and I can't feel any pain, but I can see everything around me. So I float over on top of the male nurse. He's reading the sports section of the paper, and I'm trying to get his attention, but he's reading the paper. He can't see me for some reason. So then I float around behind them. There's these three glass cubicles with patients within, and I actually went into one of them, and I floated above this patient. And now this man had just had a heart attack. He was in really, really bad shape. And as I floated above him, he opened his eyes, and he looked, and he smiled at me and waved. And interestingly enough, the next day he passed over. Okay. Now, I'm 19. I don't know what's going on here, but that's where it was. And then I floated through the doors, down the hall, and for some reason I ended up in the morgue. You know, you see those old movies with the morgue? That's where it was, and I didn't know why I was there, and I thought, ooh. Next thing you know, I shot through the roof of the hospital. It's like a Star Trek movie, watching at warp speed, all these lights shooting past me. And I went towards this beautiful, beautiful light, and I wasn't feeling any pain. I felt wonderful. And as I was going towards the light, literally towards this beautiful light, I can see something off in the distance. But I want to go there because it's peaceful. It's like going home or whatever you want to call it. And just about then, these two beings, I'm assuming they were angels, came beside me. They said, no, it's not your turn or not your time. You have to go back. And they reluctantly, I turned around, and they gave me a gentle nudge and ended up floating back, shot down through the hospital roof, came into the intensive care unit, and floated over top of my body. And as I'm floating over top of my body in my human soul form, I've got my hands, soul hands out and my feet, and there's no way in God's little green acre that I want to go back into this thick, pasty body. And I can feel myself going in. It's like clay settling into this body. And as I settle in the body, I then wake up, and I'm in incredible pain. I buzz for the nurse, and he comes over, checks my heart rate and everything else, and he says, okay, I can give you a shot of something for pain. Your heart, your blood pressure's up, and your heart beats faster. So he gave me some Demerol or whatever it was back then. And after that, it was amazing things happened. I started to reawaken. I started losing complete interest in sports. And I'd always had a yearning for anything on the metaphysical, spiritual side. So I started looking, getting as much as I could. It took a long time, but then I slowly start to see the auras and energies around people. And then I'd start seeing guides and angels in the middle of the night floating around the room. And then I'd start going up into the heavenly fields, accessing information. And also, I told you, I got a lot of training through the Rosicrucians. I was always fascinated by them. Even when I was a small child, I'd see all their symbols, and I wanted to join the Rosicrucians. And it was a great way they helped me, all the information and knowledge. So I put all that together, and eventually, with help and guidance, I was able to start putting courses together and following this path. And eventually, I wrote my three books and got to where I'm at. So it's, if anybody doesn't believe in reincarnation, I guess I should say I feel sorry for them, because they don't realize that we're an eternal soul. We're here. We come back over and over. We're a divine spark from the Creator, from the great Spirit above, and we keep coming back over and over. And so if we all look at ourselves as human souls within a physical form, we can take on a different understanding or belief. And it's really cool. And what you're talking about when you're doing your regression work, how people seem to get what they need, I guess it's for their greatest spiritual growth.
Hope
I answered that for you.
You did. And, you know, what you explained and described was when Patrick and I did the, I think we did 8 hours, when we did the past life show. It was, you know, what you described is exactly what people described. I mean, you know, the exact same things happened to the people that we interviewed, and I think what we found so fascinating is that it is so similar, and it's what the Bible describes. You know, not quite that way, but the Bible describes the Bible describes death as struggling for years and years and years, 60-70 years, and then you die, and then you fly away, and that's that's in essence what happens. You know, we do experience the flight. We do experience the fact that we are flying.
Oh, I agree with you. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's just having our souls free to fly away is wonderful, I think.
Oh, yeah, my God, yes. And, you know, you kind of almost feel like, you know, you almost feel jealous. about you know, it's yeah, you know, when you hear people talk about it, you hear them, you know, saying how I didn't want to come back. And
yeah.
It absolutely, you hear about the being lifted out of your body and surrounded by people you love and the element of flying towards the light. I mean, what better magical feeling could you possibly have, especially if you've been suffering and in pain and all of that stuff, you know, and to finally experience the element of crossing over to another dimension and moving into another aspect of life and to be reborn into another dimension. It's so exciting that you can't get there before your time. You can't, you know, chuck this life and say, I've had it, I'm done, I'm not going to, you know, play around with this anymore. I just figure, you know, we have to. The crossing over is so amazing, and of course my husband Patrick, you know, just passed away, and all I can think of is just how excited it must have been for him. How amazing to experience something that he had talked about, written about, dreamed about, and wondered about for so many years. And to him, death was just an adventure. It was certainly not an ending. And, you know, all I could think of was, you know, how fabulous that he got to do this.
What a wonderful journey. Life's a wonderful journey, and the passing is a wonderful journey. And for anybody out there listening, if you don't mind me saying, people should not fear death. Death, as you said, is just a transition to something better, something greater. And with more of us realize that, we can get rid of that fear and just be able to embrace our lives and live each day fully, embracing it more and more, and just enjoy it. Seeing a beautiful sunrise or a beautiful sunset, or smiling at a child when the little child laughs, and just enjoying those little miracles that has been put on the face of the earth for us.
Now, I want to ask you, I know that from my experience, anybody who's had a near-death experience comes back from it totally changed and wanting to be of service to humanity. Not everybody wants to start a school, but people who come back from a near-death experience, to absolutely everyone that we spoke to, and we spoke to a tremendous number of people, and, you know, there are probably exceptions to the rule, but we found everyone, their perspective as to their relation with the rest of humanity had shifted and changed dramatically. They now understood that they were part of a very large family, that kindness and love and sharing and giving and everything were more profoundly apparent within their realities than they had been before they had this experience. And it's very similar also to anyone who's had a UFO experience. Just the recognition that we're not alone, and that we are a family, and we are here, and you know, we need to get back together. And because I do believe that there was a time way, way, way back in the distant, distant past that's probably not even recorded, when we were a family. And you know, I don't know what happened. Politics were invented or something. I have no idea what it is, but something happened, and we lost that sense of family. And I think that people today are becoming more and more and more aware of the fact that this is a family, that we are here to help one another. And that doesn't mean we're necessarily even here to teach one another. We're just here to help one another. And you know, I think your school is fabulous, and I love that it's got my name.
But I spell it the right way. You spell it the wrong way.
It's only a matter of opinion. it's only, you know, a short space, and it's the same name. So, I think that the field of spiritual, metaphysical, holistic has come not full circle, I don't think, but it's certainly come a long way in my short lifetime. And And my short lifetime is almost 7 years. So it's just, it feels to me as though people are beginning to understand that while modern medicine is wonderful and there certainly are things that it can do that you can't do with Reiki or meditation, but that our lives should be a balance of the two. It shouldn't be one overwhelming the other, that we should have options and choices in both areas. And people are more and more coming into an understanding that we are electromagnetic people, we are an energy, and as an energy and having polarity and all of that stuff, that there's so much that we can do with the earth energy, with natural homeopathic, holistic type stuff, that the potential for the human spirit is expanding greatly.
Yeah, I think we're right on the cusp of making this heaven on earth, and that's just not preaching. It's the higher vibrations coming from people and more loving people and opening up. I really think this world, this planet, has a chance to survive and thrive. And when I hear gloom, what do we call it, those gloom and doomers saying this and that, I just kind of put that aside. I don't want to hear that because the soul is immortal, and we all recognize that, and we have a potential to make a great difference. If we can all raise our vibrations, working with light, having love flowing from our heart chakras, and just accessing information, this can be a wonderful, grand place the way it was supposed to. And we can be here on the planet and have a passport up to heaven, actually go up there, and as multidimensional beings, being able to work in both levels. And it just takes a little work to realize that. And I agree completely with you. I think we have very similar beliefs when it comes to a lot of these things. And a lot of people, when you talk about reincarnation, someone will say, well, so how many past lives did I have? Well, the answer is you don't really know. It's you could have had 1,000, you could have had 200. Each person's different. And they have to find their own answers and experience it for themselves. And I don't know how many people you read about says, oh, I was Cleopatra, as you said, in the past life. Chances are, no, you might have been Cleopatra's helper or whatever, but most people are just regular people, just souls that come back to experience wonderful things. And not always will you have a peaceful life remembering something from the past. You could have a life being hung as a thief, or you could have been burnt as a witch or whatever. And it's just amazing as you can recall, bring these feelings and emotions to the surface and release them. And I really believe when you look at your past, you can heal your present and make your future brighter. And that's what we're all supposed to do. And there's so many, many ways of doing it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And, you know, when I talk to people, especially people who have trouble wearing things tight around their neck, usually if we look back far enough, we can find they were either beheaded or hung. And, you know, people go, ooh. But the reality is there's only one way to get from one life to another, and that's by passing over. And you know, there are many different ways of croaking. And death is a threshold you cross in order to have a new beginning. I mean, it's that simple. And it sometimes makes it it's an amazing process. And you know, I have watched a number of people pass over, and they have been family members or my husband, and you know, that's the sorrow and the grief that is there at that moment is palpable, because of course you're losing for a time a connection, and you know, that's something that you do feel them, and the absence, and you do feel, you know, a void where that person physically was, but the reality is that they're still in your heart. They're still absolutely in your memories. And you know, frankly, I talk to Patrick all the time. You know, he doesn't answer, which is unusual. But no, he was the kind of person that he only stopped talking when he had to stop for breath. So it's nice to be able to get a word in edgewise these days. But you know, it's sort of like on the other side, there is no time. So that as they look back, as they kind of take a look down and see, you know, what's going on here, I don't think they, from my experience, and I'm a medium, I find that there is confusion with why are they so sad, why are they so unhappy, I'm healthy, I'm fine, I'm with people I love. What is their problem? And I think they lose that connection of that had to do with time, because it doesn't exist over there. So that when we cross over, it's like it was just a moment before, and they were here, and then they're there, and then we'll be there. So that for them, they don't have that concept of time. So, and besides that, they're having a good time. When people ask me to check in with their loved ones, and they have just crossed over, it's tough to say, well, they're having a party and they can't figure out why you're not celebrating too, because, you know, it's a reunion, it's a joyful time, it's celebration, it's a pig roast and everything else and a cake party, and I think that the Chinese have it right, that you wear white, you know, you wear black when a baby is born to mourn, because they have a lifetime they have to struggle through, and when someone dies, they wear white to celebrate the fact that they made it through.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful concept, and perhaps more of us should look at it that way and just realize that when you go up to heaven, it's such a beautiful place. I've been there a few times, remembering, even in this lifetime. And when you get up there, you can see all your friends, your loved ones, and just know that it's such a beautiful place. And it's great to know that your family and friends are happy, they're radiant, they're enjoying their lives. And when you can get the person, as you said, work with them just to get them to realize that, or get them to see and hold and experience the person that's passed over and telling them that they love them, and that individual says, I love you too, and actually see the loved one backing away with angels and guides, and there can be a tremendous healing within that person who's holding on to that grief or that pain. Their heart opens up, they start crying like babies, and suddenly they release the emotions, the pain, and as the heart opens up, that true love that's stored within there, the healing energy starts to release through the whole body, and people just, amazing changes. I watch these wonderful colors. You get a person that comes in, you know what I'm talking about, they're nice, they're sad, and you see these droopy eyes, and you can't really see the eyes of their soul as you're looking at them. And once they can open that heart chakra up and let the pain go and embrace that energy from above, they're like an entirely different person. They feel alive, they feel happy, and they go, oh, okay, now I can get on with my life. I can do wonderful things and know that they're up there and they're happy. It's great when you can do that. And I feel really blessed to have the opportunity, the gift, to work with people like that. I feel very, very honored. And I think you and I have talked about this before. We have the same belief that you're a channel. You're just here to help and guide. And no one is really special. They're not, whether they're doing healing work or teaching, whatever, they're just doing what they're supposed to do. And when a person says to you, oh, I'm wonderful, look how great a healer I am, or look how great I am at this, I get warning bells go up, because they're blocking themselves. Like their ego has stepped in the way, not allowing them to do what they need to do. And I believe in being very humble, laid back, easygoing, and just doing what I'm supposed to.
Well, I think, too, that you know, when somebody has to tell you how wonderful they are, and they're not living, they're not a living example of what they're saying, they're not walking their talk, then, you know, anytime somebody has to tell you how great they are, again, warning bells go up. It's sort of like, if you were that great, I would have known it. And you know, it's kind of, I learned a lesson a long time ago. I happily have had wonderful opportunities to learn things that prevented me from stepping on my own tongue and stumbling, You know, I've had plenty of opportunities to do that too. But I can remember I was sitting in a class in a spiritualist church, and afterwards this girl who was going to join the class went out for coffee with us all, and she proceeded to spend the whole evening telling us how excited she was because she gave messages and she channeled and she did this and she did that, and she just was so excited that she was going to be in a place where she could do that. And she did, and I said to her, I think that's wonderful. The more the merrier. We just, you know, to have more people that can give messages and stuff, that's fabulous. And I was so delighted she was going to be in the class. 5 years later, she never opened her mouth. And all I could think of was, what were you talking about 5 years ago when you told it? And this was a weekly class. And, you know, I kind of wanted to say to her, where did it go? And you know, she was always quiet. She never said a thing. And after that, and she slowly drifted away into oblivion. Well, maybe not to oblivion, but she drifted away. And it was sort of like, it taught me, I never say, you know, anything about my abilities one way or the other. I have a gift and I share it. And if people like it, wonderful. And if they don't, they can always go someplace else. So, you know, I think that you know, I'm here to freely share, and if freely sharing is too expensive for some people, that they can go someplace else, and it's that easy. But I think that the aspect of having a gift and giving it away and sharing it is really, really important, and people in our field do that constantly, and that to me is a sign of somebody who, if somebody comes to me and can't afford something or they're in distress or in deep need, there's no question they get the spiritual counseling and there's no charge. There's, you know, you just don't do that. And yet I know practitioners that will say, well, it's $150, and if you can't afford it, I'll take a credit card. And if you don't have a credit card, I'll put you on a waiting list, and when you have the money, you know, I'll put you to the front of the line or whatever. And, you know, those people I look at, and I wonder just where do they think they're coming from to treat humanity that way?
Well, I agree at one point with you, but I also look at the other side of it. If you're working in this field, that's what you do for a living, then you should be able to receive something back, whether it's spiritual or some type of material.
Oh, no, blessing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But you know, there I've divided myself, kind of, and if somebody is truly in need, then I chalk it up to spiritual counseling, and you don't charge for spiritual counseling as far as a minister goes. And, you know, as far as a practitioner goes, you know, yeah, I get people pay me from time to time. And so, yes, you're right. I mean, there has to be and there's always that aspect of most people, not everyone, but a lot of people will say, they don't value something unless they have paid something for it.
Oh, yeah, exactly,
So that getting paid for your work is absolutely, you know, you have to. But milking people for money is unconscionable. And you know, I know people that do it. I don't think you do it. I think that you obviously share your gifts and talents freely. And from what I can see, you know, you have wonderful, wonderful classes. I know you guys do the Reiki. And you do chakra workshops also, which chakras are one of my favorite topics of all time.
Oh, that's cool. I remember studying chakras way back in the late 60s and early 70s, and you and I both know everybody was getting into all this stuff, among
oh,
other
yeah.
things. It was really cool. People were getting in the yoga and kundalini and all these things. So it was really cool that it's now come back greatly. And working with chakras is just amazing. You can do incredible healing work in yourself and others. And it's just, I think it's a real blessing when you can look at someone and see them smile and see the changes. If they have pain going through their body, if you can get them to open up certain chakras, they get the flow going in, that chi, that universal energy just goes into where it truly needs to go, and that person feels wonderful. And whether you're charging for it or doing it for free, it still is helping, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I have a question. I know chakras have been something that have been around for thousands of years, or the drawings of them in India and stuff like that. Originally, there were no colors associated with them. When did the colors come in, and where did they come from?
Well, I think when people ended up coming back to Earth and they got in touch with the energy from above, came down from the universe or heavenly fields through the crowns, and these beautiful healing colors came into the aura and into the chakras, and they flowed in and around. That's what I feel. And I think there's a combination when you're looking at someone, working with them, you get two things. You get each one of the chakras will have certain colors flowing around them, and then the colors from above will come down around and through the person as well. And when we're talking about colors, now, it's not written in stone. If you look at a chakra chart, they say purple, the heart's supposed to be green, the third eye is supposed to be this color and that. It may be in textbook, yeah, it's supposed to be there, but what I see is sometimes they change and shift, and it depends what's happening with the individual. So I don't think it's written in stone that, bang, this color is supposed to be that. Bang, the base chakra is supposed to be red, and the sacral chakra is supposed to be orange. That can change and shift depending on the situation. And also the other thing I do, if you don't mind me continuing here, I have a different philosophy on the crown and the third eye chakra. A lot of other schools of thought, they say the third eye is supposed to be, trying to think here clearly, but I'll look at doing this particular type of chant, and I'll send energy in. But what I'm doing is I'm affecting the crown chakra. What goes in infects the pituitary gland. And when you do work on the third eye, you will affect the pineal gland. And they're so closely attuned that it works very well. So when you get one group of people saying, well, this chakra is for the pineal, and this particular chakra is for the pituitary, I just think they shouldn't look at it that way. They should just look at, like the Buddhists do. If I'm wrong, but think of a Buddha head, and it's one huge chakra, because your crown and third eye, your pineal and pituitary, and all those areas within are so closely in proximity that when you do any type of work, that those areas will be affected. I hope I'm making myself clear here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have been working with chakras for a long time. When I did my deck of cards, I used the chakra colors. I renamed the chakras because I couldn't pronounce the Sanskrit. And, come on. And
well, I've forgotten, too.
I just renamed them all because it made it easier for me. And since it was my deck of cards, I felt very comfortable saying, hey, it's my deck. I'll do what I want with it. But the colors and everything have been something that I have been working with. And I agree with you. When I look at a person and initially I'm seeing the chakras, I'm seeing light glowing, sometimes bright, sometimes not so bright. But I'm seeing colors. I'm seeing lights rather than the colors, and it's then my mind actually puts the colors in. It's not that I actually see them, but it for me, I guess it's easier to discern the difference between them if they're different colors rather than just whirling lights, depending on how bright or how not bright they are. I find that the colors, though, do. I'm just wondering because it's the spectrum. It's red, orange, yellow, blue, green, purple, and it just seems to me that at some point in time, the texts and everything suddenly had the colors. And I'm wondering, sometimes when you go into something that sounds and feels like it is carved in stone, For instance, my husband, Patrick, was a biblical theologian. And you think when you read the Bible that the chapters and the verses, that's just how they were. But apparently somebody who was on a very long trip on horseback divided the Bible into chapters and verses because he had nothing better to do with his time. So So when you get to things like the chakras, I'm wondering if some publisher suddenly had pretty colored ink and decided to put the colors into the chakras, and somebody said it was the colors of the rainbow, and you wonder, was it something that simple? You know, hey Charlie, we can do colors. Let's just take the spectrum and go, you know, take the rainbow colors and put it on the seven chakras. There are seven colors there. And I'm wondering if it was as simple as that.
That's a possibility. I always look at the divine light, that beautiful light from above. It's white, it's
mm-hmm.
pure. It comes through us, and it can change or do whatever it needs to do. So if you say you're seeing lights, oftentimes I will do the same thing when someone's sitting in front of me. I'll see a beautiful lights around their head or in their heart chakra or wherever what particular chakra has this light shining out. And I can tell, probably the same as you do, I'm sure, that if it's dark and looks dirty, then there's an issue. But if you see a beautiful light, a brightness there, then, hey, that one seems to be working better.
Yeah, and something, and I don't know exactly what your feeling is on this, but I've had people come to me and say, I'm totally blocked in my heart chakra. And, you know, I kind of look at them and say, I don't think you're blocked. I think that you may be putting up barriers that makes the energy harder to flow. But I've never seen anybody that had a chakra that was turned off. Have you?
Oh, I've seen a few. Very, very rarely. I've met a few people that had their heart chakra just completely closed down. I could just see a little bit of gray energy there, and there's almost nothing. It was just the energy would flow maybe down around their hips and to some of the lower chakras. But I've very rarely seen two or three or four people like that. But most people will have some type of light, some type of energy in their heart chakras. And depending how open they are and what's going on in their lives, for me, I'll see some of them will have reds and darker colors if there's an issue or if there's a health problem within, and somebody that's been doing a lot of work that's full of love, their heart chakra just beams. There's a beautiful bright light comes out across their chest and just radiates out. And that tells me that when I see that, and plus when I look at the person's crown on top of their head, if I see these beautiful colors and I sense this peace, then I know it's going to be easier for me to work with that individual, whether it's doing chakra balancing work or past life regression or spiritual counseling. On the other hand, when I see someone comes through the door that has a dark, murky gray auric field, you can barely see their face. It's like they've got a black cloud in front of their eyes, and all their chakras look dirty. They look polluted. Then I know that there's a lot of issues, and it's going to be very difficult working with that individual. And for me, I really believe if you can get the person's crown open up, and the heart chakra. Those two chakras are very, very important to then allow the flowing through the whole body. If you can get those two open up, if you can work with them, then I think you have a great chance of getting the person to feel a whole lot better. Because, of course, the crown brings in that healing energy, divine energy through. The person, when they open up, they feel the tingling energy on the top of the head. The neocortex starts to tingle. They literally become more light. And then it flows down through the throat chakra into the heart. And when you see that light, that true healing energy, that loving energy stored beside the physical heart itself, it's like an electrical charge. It'll flow out, and I'll see it flowing right through the person. And all of a sudden, I'll look at this person's face, and that gray goes away, and I see these two beautiful eyes looking back at me. And I'll see an angel or someone floating around. I know that they have then connected with their higher selves and their angels. There's people that have a lot of abuse, a lot of children sometimes will have situations, and I've had them come through the door. A parent will bring a child in, and just you want to take them and just put them underneath a shower just to hold off all the dirty colors. And there's a gray type of mist, something dark hanging around them. So I do my work, and I ask for help. And in a lot of cases, the colors will change. It's just an amazing thing to watch. It's like watching, like you talk about, the colors of the rainbow, but seeing these beautiful lights start to show up on a child around the head, coming down through the body, and suddenly this little guy is looking at you and smiling, and their eyes have this sparkle and this beautiful angel around them, then you know that they've let whatever negativity go, and it helps them to get back onto the path of where they're supposed to be.
Now,
that's
a good take. A lot of times I will see the energy radiating from people is you know very close into the body, and then other times it's expanded out. There was a question that came in that they want to know, how can you expand your chakras?
Oh, okay. There's many, many ways, and not to flaunt my books, but I guess I will. My first book, Ancient Teachings for Beginners. Yeah, here I am doing it. There's a lot of exercises in there that you can work with, showing how they open up your chakras, expanding them, getting the flow through. But there's certain chants, certain techniques you can use. So I'm just going to suggest if you can work on the crown and meditation and other exercises, you can expand these aura fields. And
one thing that I have found that really does resonate to me, and I guess, and everybody is different, I'm sure, but that I have found that chimes, gongs, tuning forks, absolutely, you can feel them resonate inside of you. It's just, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
to use something like tuning forks, but let me ask you also, if a chakra is muddy, closed down, not flowing as well as it should, is that a sign? Is that something that is wise to fool with, or should it be something? Should there be a cleansing? And in other words, sometimes we have a blockage to protect ourselves, not a total blockage, but a slowdown to protect ourselves, to keep ourselves sort of blocked off from situations or emotional things that could be uncomfortable for us until we're ready to deal with them. So is it wise to try to go in and actually manipulate the chakras?
If you know what you're doing, of course you do, and there are many people that do. If you turn the right way, you get the energy flowing through, then it's great. It's like, I like using this example. If you can think of seven black rocks in a stream of water, and the black rocks represent the chi, or the blocks that are in the chakras. And as the flow of water energy goes through, these black rocks will break up, and this wonderful flow will continue right through the body and right through the stream. And where I'm coming from, if you can look at it and work at it, when the person's ready, they can truly heal and let those chakras open up and be released. A lot of people will bury a lot of pain, particularly. Again, we're both probably know sure about this part of it. If there's a problem in the heart chakra, oftentimes there's a problem in the sacral chakra or the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get one open up, the heart chakra with love, then the sacral chakra will respond and open up too. And there's a lot of illnesses or diseases that we have can be dealt with, or the pain and suffering can be alleviated or lessened if a person can learn to open up these chakras. And if you're doing it properly, you can help that individual. Now, if you're working on someone and say you don't know quite what the heck you're doing, you can cause a lot of trouble, a lot of issues with that individual. You can inadvertently trigger that kundalini energy to flow up through the body, and it can be sometimes blocked. It won't go past, say, the solar or the heart, or it won't get up through the crown because there's a block. It's like water flowing, and it's up against the dam. So that will cause problems. Now, if you get the kundalini flowing, some way it can flow up like a volcanic eruption, just shoot right through the crown. And if it's not, those chakras aren't open up properly, it can affect the nerve cells and affect the sympathetic nervous system, and so much damage can be done. The person may become irritable, uncomfortable, can't sleep. But if you can do it properly, opening up these chakras the way they're supposed to, sometimes that kundalini and their own chakra energy will flow up gently through each one of the chakras and up through the crown. And I believe that you should be working from the crown down through to the base and through the feet. There's a lot of people feel that you should be working with the feet, the energy of the earth, and bringing it up through. That's fine, but if you can learn to work with both, it makes it better. Because if you can start up by the crown, it'll trickle down and work its way down through to the base and ultimately through the feet. And you can feel the energy of the earth, the power of Mother Earth coming up through your body. So I think you need to work with both the crown and the energy of the feet and with the chakras, blending them all together. And that's my concept.
No, I think that, well, certainly with the Kundalini energy, I can see how you would need to work that way. I did learn, though, at some point that working at I guess it was when we were sending healing energy, that the energy was brought through the crown to the heart and from the root to the heart, blended and then sent forth from the heart to do healing energy and stuff like that.
Yeah, that one works too. If I can digress for a moment, someone asked a question how you can expand the chakras. One way to do it is just to put if they're still listening, if that individual can, or whoever it is, can just put their hands over their chest and their heart chakra, feel the warmth of their hands going into the heart chakra, and that individual can just take a deep breath in, hold it, and release it. And as they do that, if they focus on someone that they love, a baby, a horse, a cat, a dog, or any loved one, they may start feeling this wonderful, warm, tingling sensation spreading across the chest, going into those minor chakras. And as that happens, this warmth spreads further and further. And when that occurs, when the heart chakra opens up, then all the other chakras will slowly start to open up, and the auric field around the individual will get brighter too. So that's what I want to pass on to that last question that I probably didn't answer properly.
No, you did. She's still here.
Oh, okay. She's still listening. Okay.
She's still listening. The chakras have always been fascinating, and I have found that. But the one thing I didn't see you mention in your book, and I'm sure it's got. I haven't read all three. But do you work with a pendulum at all, dowsing?
I used to for years, and I used to find it fascinating. You take a pendulum, do a dowsing, and it was really cool when you work on the chakras, and it just it's great. I haven't used that in a long time, but it was really a cool tool or technique that you can use too.
I have found that using dowsing rods, scanning someone's body, is amazing because you certainly can tell when energy is powerful and when energy isn't powerful. And, of course, that's you know, chakras open, chakras closed. I mean, it's really cool. I do have a question that's going to sound so silly, but you're finally getting somebody that knows a lot more about chakras than I do. A long time ago, and this has bugged me for probably 30 years. A long time ago, I had a meditation group. I had it for 17 years, and they came to the house every Friday night, and I did a channeled lead meditation and then gave messages, and then we had a party. And we were starting off one night. We hadn't quite begun, and one of the people came up to me and said that he had just taken a Kundalini workshop, and I said, "That's cool." And he said, "Do you have a walnut?" And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, Kundalini resonates to walnuts, and I have to sit on walnuts in order to keep my Kundalini open." And I just kind of looked at him and I said, "I have some cashews, maybe, but no walnuts." Is there anything to that, a walnut emitting the same energy as Kundalini energy?
I think that's absolute rubbish between the two of us.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never heard that one. That's really strange.
Well, I have never sat on a walnut, to be honest with you, but
that's good.
That conversation has some peanuts by accident sometime, but you know, it just seemed to me so strange that he was taught that in a Kundalini workshop.
Ooh. Okay.
So
to each their own, I guess.
I guess, you know, well, you know, it was kind of like, were they trying to hatch it? Were they trying to, you know? But, you know, it's sort of, it was amazing. But if someone came to you and you know, do you do workshops with the chakras, or are your workshops basically the Reiki energy ones?
Oh, both myself and my wife Carol do a lot of work with chakras, chakra workshops. We do one-on-one classes, spiritual counseling, past life therapy, distance healing. So we do many, many things. And I actually teach a past life therapy course, too. So there's a lot of things we do. I really love still working with chakras. So when I get a few people wanting to do a chakra workshop, it's great. I just sit there and we get them to meditate, do the techniques, and getting the energy to flow up and down through the body. So, yeah, I guess I love doing that. So it's part of one of the many things that we do.
Well, you know, people are constantly asking me about, okay, there is an awakening coming. The consciousness of humanity is expanding. And you know, that sounds great and wonderful, but you know, and I sometimes wonder, do they even know what they're talking about? Because when we say there's an awakening coming, when there's consciousness is expanding, you know, we're talking to the fact that understanding and awareness and insight is something that is expanding within us if we apply ourselves to it, if we open ourselves and embrace a cosmic awareness that is not something that has been commonly done on this planet at this point in time.
Oh, I agree with you. I look at the fact that you have to work at it, and when you're ready, they use the term cosmic consciousness, divine inspiration will come through. And I think there's so many, many people that are attaining that. As they work, they open up their crowns. They're getting in touch with the higher energy from above, God, the Creator, the Great Spirit, whatever you want to look at it as. And they get this divine consciousness. I know they talk about it. I don't want to get into the religious aspects too much, but they talk about at the age of 33, Jesus received enlightenment or cosmic consciousness. And that's the idea. I think everybody on this planet has the potential. It doesn't have to be age 33. When they can get that cosmic consciousness, that divine illumination, and when you get it just for a moment, that spark, then you know. There's just some inner knowing, and I think everyone on this planet has the potential to do that right now.
I believe you, and I agree with you. It's just, it's sort of like, okay, you not only have the potential, but maybe you've even received it, but does that mean you're going to use it? Isn't that a choice?
It's a choice. You have free will. That's why we're here. We have free will to do things. And when you have that choice, you have to follow through with action in order to create or manifest something.
But haven't you... I have experienced people who claim cosmic consciousness, Christed consciousness, illumination, all sorts of ascension type of statements, and yet their lives are not a reflection of what their experience they're saying they had.
Okay. Yeah, I've noticed that too. There's a lot of people say to me, well, I've got this, I've got that. And when you look at their lives, they're not a reflection of what they have received. So it's a matter of the conscious and subconscious mind changing. When you get the conscious and subconscious working together and the superconsciousness or whatever above all flows together and certain changes go on inside the brain, which is controlled by the mind, then you can start manifesting things in your life, making them better and greater. So you're right. There's a lot of people that have this divine or Christ consciousness may come through, but they don't follow up on it, or they don't do what they need to do, or something blocks them, or something gets in the way. But when you keep working at it, you never stop. If you keep doing what you truly want to do, following your mission or purpose in life, then you can get to where you need to go. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It's going to be struggles. We both know that. And you just keep going away until you get it. I like that movie with Tim Allen way back, Galaxy Quest or something, where he says, never give up, never surrender. And even though it's a comical science fiction movie, it still makes perfect sense. Never give up, never surrender.
I do remember that one. That was actually quite good.
Yeah, it was really funny, and I thought that those words were cool. They had a more of a message there, too. It wasn't just for fun and enjoyment. Yeah.
No, that's true. No, I have struggled a lot with people who call into the show. I can remember one woman who kept saying, I've given up everything, I've sold everything, I've done everything the universe has asked of me, and the universe hasn't given me what I need or want. And I just, you know, it's kind of like, but it's not up to you to determine that. You surrender to the experience, knowing you'll be cared for, but you don't do it in anticipation of what you think you need or want. You do it because you know that the universe will care for you. I mean, I don't know a one of us that's rich, to be perfectly honest with you, but we all survive very nicely. You know, we have roofs over our head and clothes on our back and food in our mouths and credit cards that need to be paid off. But you know, we're human. But it's sort of like, if we were rich, I wonder if people would listen to us as much.
It depends on the individual. It's who that's speaking to. If you have someone that's rich, that gives out a message to help others, yeah, I think that's great. There's nothing wrong with wealth and abundance. But if we look at it as a spiritual abundance, money mm-hmm. that comes from God, from the Creator, and use it in that way, I think it's wonderful. I mean, how do you build churches? How do you build roads or do anything without money? And we have to look at it that way. And, yeah, I guess what we have to do is all of us have a find a balance between money and spirituality and knowing we can work quite well with it.
Yeah, I'd like to be the first rich one just to prove it could be done. Just for the heck of it. But you know, to be honest with you, I think I am absolutely as rich as anybody could possibly be. I don't have any money, but I am really, really rich. And the fact that I can work with people all the time, that I can share, that I can grow, that I can learn from them. And I think one of the coolest things about this field is no matter how much you know, there's always more you can gather, and everyone has a lesson that they can teach you, a piece of wisdom, a piece of knowledge that they can share with you. And that's, I mean, the fact that you've got three phenomenal books, and I have to tell people they are written, they're written so that you can understand them. So many of these books are written, you know, with such a heavy hand that you know, you struggle through them trying to understand them. And your books are written for all of us normal people who really, you know, want to expand our understanding and yet don't necessarily have a PhD in metaphysics.
Yeah, well, thank you very, very much. My last book, Past Lives for Beginners, took me over 3 years to write. I rewrote it, and it was like three or four different books, and I finally put it together the right way. I had tremendous help from Llewellyn, and these wonderful people at the right time came in at the right moment to put it out there exactly where it's supposed to be. It took till from 2000, my first book, to 2013 for my third book to come out, and it just feels wonderful, and it feels like a blessing to be able to know that's going to be able to help the hearts, souls, and minds of many, many people. And that's what it's all about. And we've talked about this before. It's the legacy, the one that we really leave behind, is mm-hmm. the memories, who we are, what we did. And when you think fondly of someone that's passed over, hey, that person left a legacy. They didn't have to leave millions of dollars or all this and that. The legacy is their soul, who they were, how they touched everyone. And perhaps people write books or they do artwork. They get the information, beautiful art. They write beautiful music, like Paul McCartney. I'm sure he does a form of channeling. And I know John Lennon did, even though he may not have been aware of it. I mean, you've got that song, Imagine. That one, just,
oh my God,
it says it all, yeah. And you
absolutely
have someone like, yeah, you get someone like Beethoven, who was totally deaf at one point. He's outside at night walking along beside the river, and he sees the moonlight. Suddenly he's inspired. He goes in and writes the Moonlight Sonata. So that's a form of channeling. And the same as someone like Michelangelo just lying there looking up at the clouds, and he, all of a sudden he sees an image of the finger of God. And he goes back and he paints the Sistine Chapel. So that's all part of the gift that comes from above, and we're all supposed to embrace it and use it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think each and every one of us has at least a special gift, if not more than one, that have been cosmically, spiritually imbued within our spirit. And not everybody is able to find that gift in a lifetime, but those people that have the good fortune to have been able to evolve into that spiritual gift and then turning around and sharing it with everybody else, I think it's an amazing gift. And you know, when I read people, I always look for what is that special something that you've got that maybe you don't know, but that, you know, maybe we can put you on track to discover it. And it's so phenomenal, because so many people say, I have no talent, I have no gift, I'm not creative. And we are a product of creation, ergo, we are creators as well.
Yes, absolutely. And if we can just be able to make people realize that everybody has a purpose or a reason for being here. Some of people are already having their purpose, the reason, they're not even aware of it. And there's others that are constantly searching. And once you just go out and enjoy your life and be as happy as you can and see the wonderful gifts, you can just relax and know that it will come in some strange way. Perhaps someone will phone you wanting you to take a class, or someone wants you to read a book, or someone wants you to take a trip, and they work in strange ways up above. Angels and guides and all the beings, they just seem to open doors in amazing ways, and we can trust that. It's great. And I don't know what else to say about that. When someone says, no, I don't have any talent, or no, I don't like this, and no, I don't like that, first thing they should do is recognize that they have talent, and they're a beautiful being, the soul within, and they should love themselves. And once they love themselves and start sending that love out to others, they can then recognize that they have probably wonderful gifts that they just haven't even tapped into. And I think you do what you're supposed to get them to say, hey, listen, you know, you shouldn't be that way. You should open up. I really like to empower people, and I think it's great when you can empower someone to do their work to get to where they need to go.
Oh, yeah, and you know, the fact that so many of us just go through life feeling as though we aren't adequate because we can't do what somebody else can do. But the reality is, you know, why would you want to copy somebody? Why not be uniquely yourself and create an expression of yourself within reality that is so unique that anybody looking at it will know, ah, that was Barbara DeLong, or that was Douglas, or, you know, I think that when people try to follow other people's patterns, they deny their own uniqueness. And in so doing, they shut down a gift. So that it's sort of like, you know, I tell people, go out, be weird, be different, be unique. Because
that's the way it should be.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Seriously. I would be insulted if somebody said I fit into a niche.
Yeah, that's when you're outside the box, things operate differently and you see things differently. It's the way it should be. Everybody should be weird, wonderful, and unique, and because we're all unique souls and just exploring and enjoying our lives and making the best of it. And,
well, I think too, when people get into this field initially, everybody, you know, reads the classics. They read Edgar Cayce. They read Nostradamus. They read, if they're smart, well, no, if they really want to beat themselves up, Madame Blavatsky. I mean, she was a crazy lady. But
oh,
you
yeah,
know, they...
Yeah.
They read the Bible. They go into the different you know, big time people that are out there, and then they think that you know, by studying this and learning it all and being able to repeat it out to somebody else, that makes me spiritual. And no, that makes you a prop. That makes you a parrot. That means that you can say something that somebody else said that is long gone dead. And I, you know, my philosophy is fine, you know, do all the research, absolutely, because there's nothing more fun than reading some of these people, not Madame Blavatsky, but
oh gosh, no,
oh God, but you know, then take it and embrace it and make it your own, and then tell me what you think. Because then you're the prophet. Then you've made it your own. Then you put your own personal stamp on it, and you've taken your life experiences and you've put it into that, and you're saying something that nobody else has said because nobody else had that material to work with. That makes you a prophet. And, you know, whether or not 2,000 years, 5,000 years from now people are quoting you is a whole other ball of wax. But, you know, come back then and see.
Yeah, that's... pretty much where I'm at when I'm dealing with people, and I think we just should explore this world and do what we can to raise the vibrations, raising the consciousness of everyone. And I really do think that there is a potential for us to be able to have this planet survive. And I don't know if we have time, but could I share my pre-birth memory with you? Would that be all right? Or
oh, sure.
Okay, yeah. I can remember very, very clearly before I was born, like I get pictures of it, and where it was up in the heavenly fields, and I'm actually standing, and it looks like a Roman forum type of place, the marble, and there's these beautiful beings in a semicircle sort of standing looking at me, and... there's one woman. She's very, very beautiful. I guess the word would be she's black. Of course, she wasn't an African-American, whatever. She's this spiritual person up there. And she's got this beautiful white hair and these beautiful eyes. And she's just glowing. And she's just eternal. And there's all these other people or beings around beside her that are all spread out there. And some look like they're dressed in the Star Trek type of outfits. And it's really, really... strange. So as I'm standing there, and I'm saying, no, I don't want to go back to Earth. Are you kidding? Why do I want to go there? And they say, well, you're supposed to go back. This is what you're supposed to do. And I've got really stubborn about it. All of a sudden, in front of me, there's this holographic image starts to form. It's the Earth. And then I start seeing all these visions, all these things happening. The wars on the planet, the pestilence, the death, the floods, all these things going on. And all of a sudden, at the end of it, it shows this beautiful planet with these spiritual, loving people working together in harmony and actually creating a heaven on Earth. And then it disappears, the holographic image. And this beautiful woman looks at me and says, you and many, many people, that's your purpose or mission to come back to Earth. So I say, okay, all right. So they take me to another room up there, and it's almost like a little small, I guess, room, and there's a table, a Reiki massage-type table, and they lay me on this table. I'm sort of floating above the table, and they come around in tiered seats standing there, and as I'm lying there on this table, I'm looking up at this beautiful green emerald crystal, and it's just shining brightly, and I feel the vibrations. And they're starting to hum or chant and some type of singing, and I feel this vibration going on. All of a sudden, I'm out of there. I sip down the earth, and I'm going into, back then, the delivery room, and I'm coming out of my mother's body, and the doctor's grabbing my feet. I'm looking at it, and he slaps me on the butt, and I'm seeing me crying and making that noise. And as I'm looking around, I'm getting really angry. And then I look up in the soul form, and I can see the old-fashioned type of light bulb with the cage, the green thing, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
God, this is ugly compared to this beautiful emerald green crystal. And that's what I remember, the pre-birth, and then into the birth. And I was very, very angry for a long time. I had a chip on my shoulders until I started to recognize and realize that we all come back. We sign a soul contract. We come back to do what we're supposed to learn and to grow. And it took a long time for me to get to where I'm at. So I wanted to share that with you and everyone. And not everybody remembers their pre-birth, but there are a few people. But when you can do things like that and follow through, then it just shows you that there's just such an amazing universe out there. We're just maybe here on the planet, but there's much more going on around. So I really think that we have a potential. All of us can make a difference and actually make this a beautiful planet. Even though we've got all these terrible problems going on, I still think there's hope for humankind.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's really, truly amazing because, you know, I don't have a pre-birth memory, but I do know that I tell people I have a calling, and I really believe it, and I don't believe it was the wrong number. So, you know, I think we are definitely here for a reason, and you know, people call people like you, people like me, light workers, and I would imagine from what I can tell, everybody that I see in the chat room is definitely, you know, I would perceive as a light worker, somebody who in their own way has a calling to help put a message out there. And the message, it's different from everybody because all of us have a different way of expressing it, of feeling it, of writing it. And you know, it's a phenomenal thing that it's the same message, but it not only comes in different languages, but in different phraseology so that people can understand it. And it's all the same. It's just like all major religions come from the Golden Rule. And I think that the message is coming out of light workers' mouths over and over and over and over again is, you know, love one another, you know, share. You know, there's so much that can be experienced if love and light and joy are a part of your life. And even though lives are hard, it doesn't mean that you can't have a good, rich one. You can't. I mean, people in concentration camps had spiritual, joyful lives. So that if they can manage it, we certainly can too.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And you're right, there's millions and millions of light workers on this planet making a difference. They know in some level, deep down inside, why they are here, what they are supposed to do. And they're just doing what they're supposed to. And it's just, I think it's wonderful. It's amazing. You have all these people doing Reiki, doing channeling, doing so many different types of modalities and just touching so many people. And if you get more people that are enlightened, then the world gets brighter. And as the world gets brighter, then that dark stuff starts to dissipate and completely leaves this planet. And I really believe that.
Well, I think too, I sometimes consider my enlightenment to be a 40-watt bulb and sometimes it's 100 watts and sometimes it's a three-way bulb, but you know, it's you know, there are moments when you sit back and you think, holy mackerel, what have I got myself into? And then other moments when life is so sweet and so amazing that it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've had the experience when you're down going, oh, what am I doing here? What did I do wrong? And then you have someone walks up to you and say, oh, you know, you worked with me or my daughter or my son years ago, and you made all this difference. I want to thank you very much. And when they tell you that, you go, oh, okay, yeah, all right, I feel better. Now I just know that it's the right thing to do. So it's great when someone comes up and gives you the message when you need to get it.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, it's funny because all of us really, really are working from a genuine, sincere place in our hearts, and yet sometimes, it just feels as though you want somebody, not necessarily to pat you on the back, you just want to get a sign that you're going in the right direction. And
yeah.
And I can remember 20 some years ago when I was painting the cards, I can remember walking the dog outside, and it had to be like 3 in the morning, and I was talking to the dog and any spirit that happened to be there. You know, I was saying, you know, I'm doing all this work, and I'm assuming a great deal. I really feel I'm compelled to do this, but at the same time, I could possibly be crazy too. So, you know, give me a sign and make it simple. Burning bush, clap of, you know, thunder, lightning coming across the sky, you know, a booming voice from above, just anything simple. You know, it doesn't have to be extreme. Just I'd like to see a burning bush, actually, and nothing. And all I heard was the jingle of the dog's leash, and we lived by the water, so there was the clinking of the rigging and the boats that were in the boatyard down beyond us. And so I got cocky, and I said, okay, you know, I need to have a sign because I think I could be crazy, and I'm going to stop all of this work until I get a sign because, frankly, I really don't want to go much further over the edge without medication. So
yeah.
if I'm not crazy, I want a sign. If I am crazy, I'm going to go home and I'm going to go to bed and I'm going to see the doctor in the morning. But I really sincerely need to have a message from you to know that I'm doing the right thing and I'm on the right track. And there was still silence, and I said, I'm on strike. I'm quitting. I'm stopping. I'm doing nothing more till I hear something. And please pardon my language. Well, I'll clean it up. A seagull flew over and defecated on my head.
Okay, I guess that was a sign.
And I looked at the dog and I said, that's supposed to be good luck, isn't it? And she looked at me and like, you know, you are crazy. Go for the medication. And so I went back home and I got back to work. I just figured, okay, this is my sign, you know. Burning bush has been done, I guess. I don't know. I just thought that it would be a nice thing to be able to say, and the cosmos created this miracle to tell me I was on the right path. And it didn't happen that way, folks, but I'm on the path still, and this is 25 years later, and so I guess the message was a good one, and you know, it certainly, I think that one of my fears always and will always continue to be that you don't want the ego to take over. You don't want your ego to decide to, you know, create a pedestal for you. And you want to make sure that you're grounded as well as can be expected, and you're doing the right work. I every now and then really do a reality check because it's important for me to do that, because I don't want to float off into la la land and start, you know, being something that I'm not. And that does happen. And it's really important for people to have an anchor, to have a reality check person. I'm very fortunate because I have a very active chat room, and they'll tell me when I float off into the wrong direction if that happens. And I have good friends that will ask me if I'm, you know, that will tell me I'm full of it if I have gone over the edge. And I know you've got your wonderful wife Carol that really, you know, I'm sure holds you down from time to time. So
yeah, if she didn't, I would have floated off a long time ago.
But you know, I think it's one of the dangers of being in this field. You know, you spend so much time in such a joyful, blissful state that you forget that there is reality out there. And you know, I don't watch the news anymore because, frankly, I don't understand most of it. But I stopped watching it when it became so manipulative that it was offensive to me. Jeannie is very up on everything that's out there. And the other night somebody asked a question about currency and stuff like that, and I had no idea what she was talking about. Jeannie, however, did. But
okay.
You know, I think that this field is one that it is a wonderful, blissful place to be, and yet it also has a great deal of, and I know the term that used to be used for it, and I don't know if it still is, but the glory can basically warp you and send you in the wrong direction, and I've seen it happen an awful lot.
Yeah, so have I. I've seen people just take off, and they're up in the clouds, and they're not down on the earth walking on the sand like they're supposed to. You can work in both places and still be balanced here and be a real person, and that's where we need to be. And, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And people can do that. I could tell you stories about
people
that just, some people, they just go off the deep end, and they don't come back, and it's too bad. So having a balance in your life is wonderful. And when you're up there, you feel enlightened. The endorphins are pumping through. You're just higher than a kite. You're legally probably stoned, even though you haven't had any medication, because you got all these endorphins running through your body. And then you step back into the real world, and you go, "Oh my! I got to put gas in the car. I've got to go out there. It's cold." And it brings you down to earth, and it's good to know that we're human. Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, I talk to people about having a foot in both realities and becoming the bridge between the two. Because, frankly, if you were just floating on the other side and just floating in I call it la la land, you would have no place to manifest the wonderful wisdom and insight that you've gathered. And if you're just solidly in reality and you're not open to the mystical and the magic that's out there, your reality is a cold one. And so if you create a bridge between the two, and you are in the middle of the bridge, then you have the best of all possible worlds, and it's a magnificent place to be. And sometimes I go too far to one side of the bridge or the other, but most of us, you know, have you know, an average ability to stay in the middle and not float too far one way or the other. But it's an amazing thing, and to see people that have become blown away with the magic and forgotten that it's not to play with, it's meant to help, and it's meant to heal, and it's meant to help enlighten. It's not meant to be a toy, it's meant to be a tool. And it's to be, you know, it's meant to be used for humanity. I know a lot of the old-time spiritualist churches, and that's where I got my initial training. They, for those of you that have never been to a spiritualist church, usually it's very much like regular churches, except at the very end of the service, they do spirit communication. And I asked the minister one time, I said, you know, why do this? Because it in so many ways has been called a parlor trick. And yet it's not. I mean, you seriously do get messages from people that are there, and you give them to people. But why make it a part of a church service? It just doesn't. It doesn't feel like it belongs. And he said it's the hook, and we put it at the end because they have to sit through the service and get the message before they get the chocolate sauce on top. And it fascinated me. You know, they had the right idea. People sit through the service, they get the message, and then they get entertained, and they go for the entertainment. But if you're lucky, they get the message.
Okay, that's a great way of looking at it, and I just think it's amazing. But in order to get to where you are with the wisdom to help others, you have to struggle and go through all these experiences and know what it really feels like. So when someone phones you or you meet them in person, they're telling you these stories of these problems that they have. If you've been there, if you've experienced it, then you can be empathic towards them and understand and comprehend and be able to guide them. You say, "Hey, listen, oh yeah, I've been there. maybe you should look at it this way. So you have to go through the experiences of life to get to where you can make a difference and have that, I guess if you want to call it, wisdom to help others. And it just takes living in this world and doing what we do to make it a better place.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I've often said that a teacher who tries to teach a lesson they haven't experienced is talking to an empty classroom.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. It sounds right.
It well, look at Alcoholics Anonymous. They're very successful and they do really good work, but the people that are in charge of it are people that are in recovery. And you look at any of those 12-step programs, it's the people that have succeeded the program that are teaching the program, and it makes it worthwhile. You wouldn't go to somebody who hadn't lived long enough to experience stuff for advice. You wouldn't go to a 12-year-old for marriage counseling.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I think it just makes it fascinating to be on this planet doing what we do and helping others. And all of a sudden, when you get away from doing this type of work, you get to enjoy life. You meet your friends and family. You have a wonderful supper or dinner, and you're having drinks and just enjoying each other's company. You're laughing and sharing things. And that's what life is truly about, family and friends, and just enjoying the blessings that we have here on the physical earth, the simple things. And that's what really is important, watching the stars at nighttime. It doesn't cost you anything to watch these beautiful stars. And if we think of that way, and each morning saying, I'm truly blessed, and at nighttime, I feel wonderful, I'm truly blessed. And when we have problems, situations come up, we look at it and go, okay, so what am I supposed to learn from this? How do I grow? How do I change? And it makes us a better person if we can look at that and do the changes.
Absolutely. I think the big part about this field and growing and spiritual enlightenment and all of it is that we have to be ready to do the work. And it's not easy. I mean, if it were easy, everybody would be there. But it's working on ourselves. And I think that's where so many people veer off the path. It's like, I'll help you evolve, and I'll help you grow, and I can teach you how to do this, and I can teach you how to do that. I haven't done it myself, but I have the book. And you know, it's sort of like, I can now with great validity speak with people who have lost their loved one. And you know, prior to that, all I could say was, I can't imagine how it feels, but I know it must be awful. And now I can say things with greater sensitivity and greater depth of purpose. And it's so important that you grow and you do the work on yourself. And you can't counsel somebody in something that you haven't experienced. And I'm not saying you should go out and you know, get a divorce so you can experience it and then counsel people, but I am saying that you know, that's an extreme. However, I've done it twice, and I can really counsel people that way. But the reality here is, you know, a sense of unconditional, a sense of communication, a sense of all of these things are things that we are constantly working on within ourselves, and practitioners and light workers and spiritual empaths and all of it. I know there's not a day that I don't look at my own life and say, I could do better. I should work on this. I really stepped in it there. I better back up and learn to do this in a better way. I think that the day we stop learning is the day we stop growing, is the day we stop being effective.
Oh, yes. And for me, we're always learning. And the day you take your last breath is the day you stop learning here on earth, but you continue learning up in heaven. And that's the way we should look at things. We're always learning. There's so much to know and learn. It just it could probably take another dozen lifetimes to be able to get what you really need. It's just an amazing experience. And I just it's just hard to explain that it's just there and you need to work at it and be humble
you know,
and recognize differences.
I sometimes wonder if next life, when I come back, and I'm sure I will, if I will even be in this field, if I will, you know, it's kind of curious because I know coming through time, we've had lifetimes where we were practitioners and worked with our gifts, and then other lifetimes where we learned what it was to, like to be a creep and a murderer and a burglar. So, you know, I wonder how it's arranged because I would like to think that, having come to this point, that next time I will do it better, and the time after that I'll do it better than that. I would like to think, and I do because I don't have any other thing to go by, I'd like to think that I've really screwed up as much as I'm going to in a major way. And that, okay. And that, you know, and that moving forward, there'll be little screws, not big ones. I would hate to think that, you know, next lifetime I'm going to be a mass murderer because I hadn't quite experienced that one yet. So, you know, I would hope that our souls, you know, ever take us forward and don't take us backwards in the experiential areas. I haven't really, you know, thought about it that much, but it just occurred to me that having come this far, I would hate to not be able to take it further, even further, next lifetime.
I don't think that's going to happen. I look at right now on this planet, everybody that's come back here has chosen mm-hmm. to come back, and it's for a greater spiritual growth possible. So the opportunities are just incredible. That's why we've come back. We can experience so much, so many things, get rid of a lot of the karmic debt and become more enlightened and go back to heaven. And when we do come back for a future life, it'll be a better life. It'll be a wonderful life. Maybe be able to just be a gardener and drink tea or walk along the beach. But the idea is to grow and be better for it. And I really think when we go up there to heaven, we analyze their lives, why we had this happen, what we're supposed mm-hmm. to learn from it, and grow, and know that we're the culmination of each life. Our soul comes in and out over and over, and we eventually become a better soul, a better being. And that's where a lot of us are getting to. I really believe, truly, that we have great opportunities to have wonderful
Absolutely.
Things now and in the future. Yeah. So I don't think you ever have to worry about being a mass murderer.
Well, I've already informed the universe. I think it's 65. I said, that's it. I'm not doing any more karmic debt this lifetime. Roll it over to the next life. You know, I'll never know what hit me there. And, you know, I'm sick of it now. So, and I have to admit that since that period of time, I haven't had any experience that I felt was a karmic experience, you know, as far as debt goes. Yeah, I'm fine with getting stuff. I just don't want to have to pay out anymore. And I really felt at that point in time that karmically speaking, if the scales weren't balanced, I really didn't care. So.
Okay. I think what happens as you keep doing your work, you get these wonderful things opening up for you. People giving you gifts here and traveling, mm-hmm. seeing these wonderful places. And I think that's part of our rewards as we do things. It's fruit of our labors, so to speak. And these little things open up for us just to show us that, hey, you've worked hard. You need to have a little break, a little party, enjoy
mm-hmm.
things. And that's the way it should be, knowing cool. that, oh, okay, this has been a rough go, and now I've got to go here. I get to do this. And, oh, this is cool. And it just helps so much.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the reality is that Our life is a stream. It doesn't dead end. It's a stream and it's constantly flowing. And to try to hold, you can't hold a stream in one place at all. It's a constantly moving thing, and our lives are too. And a long time ago, I had a very bad experience, and I felt it was terribly unfair, but. I had a ring, and on the ring I wrote, "And this too shall pass." just to remind me that no matter how bad something is, it will get better, and no matter how good something is, it can get better. And so to try to hold our reality in a stagnant, stable place means that it will be stagnant. And, if anybody's ever been around stagnant water, it's awful. So the fact that constant change is really important to us. We grow, and we get better. And so it's sort of like you even though moments are precious and magical and spiritual and just fabulous, they will grow, they will move on, and they will get better. And it's sort of like to try to hold something and not let anything change is to create stagnancy in our life, and we don't want to do that.
No, I agree with you. You have to keep changing, keep evolving, becoming better. If you're stagnant in your life, things are put on hold, and you don't learn and you don't grow. And mm-hmm. I agree with you. You have to let things change. And there's a lot of people who are afraid of change, and they shouldn't be. Change is great. It's a transition. I think we should embrace it and really enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell people that change is fabulous. It means you have outgrown something and you've moved on to a higher level. And the only place it's bad is if your pants have to get bigger. So, it was the only place change is not good. But as far as change in a life, a career, I mean, it's fabulous. It's wonderful. Change is people should welcome it. It says to them, okay, you have moved beyond the restrictions that were there, and now you have now we're opening the doors for you to go into a more expansive reality. I mean, why would anybody be upset with change? And sometimes change comes when we fight it. It's like sometimes a job isn't appropriate for us, and yet we don't move when we should, and so we get fired, and people are sad over that. And the reality is you should have moved on when you knew it. You shouldn't have said, I hate this job, I want to change. I just noticed the time. Hey, Doug, we're out of time.
Oh, really? I was having a ball. This was a blast.
Me too. We will do this again. We will expose the world to DeLong's times too.
This has been great. I really appreciate you having me on the show. I just love talking to you and others. I light up like a Christmas tree. It helps me become inspired. It's wonderful. Thank you very much.
I had a great time too, and I absolutely will have you back, but I also will help you and Carol get a show of your own going, because I think that's going to be a very important part of your reality at some point in time.
That would be great. Carol's sort of starting to embrace that idea. It's coming step by step, but I think she's almost there.
Well, I'm sure you can work on her well, and I will certainly help as best I can. But it is important to get a spiritual positive message out there. And I think that you have a lot to say and share, and I bet Carol does too. So I want to thank you so much. I want to thank the chat room for being here. We had an amazing number of people, and I will give you a call tomorrow, and we will figure out when next we're going to do this.
That sounds great. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Absolutely. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye
now.
You're
welcome. Bye-bye. Thank you.